Welcome to Impulse. I'm your host, Abby Gervais, and today I'm thrilled to sit down with a dancer and choreographer whose work is deeply rooted in imagination, ecology, and embodiment. Brenna Moser is artistic director of Analog Dance Works, and she's here to talk about a new three-part piece she's developing, starting with a section called The Other Kingdom. Brenna, thank you so much for joining me. Let's start with the basics. Who are you, and what are you currently working on?
Sure. My name is Brenna Moser, and I am a dancer and choreographer and artistic director of Analog Dance Works. So this new piece that I'm making, I always have to make like these epic dances. So it's actually one part of a three-part dance that I'm hoping to premiere next year at the Luminary Arts Center.
Epic is right. You mentioned this particular section, The Other Kingdom, centers on the plant world. I know it was inspired by a book that really sparked your imagination, right?
This section is called The Other Kingdom, and it's about the plant kingdom. I was inspired by this book called The Light Eaters by Zoe Schlanger. Yeah. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit.
That's in the article.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's a really, like, if she does a great job of laying out all the facts, but does really emphasize that this is all plausible things, but the scientific community hasn't agreed that this is true yet or not. There's still a lot of arguments going on. So I try to remember that.
So the book opens up a world of speculative science, things that are possible, but not fully accepted. Still, it opened the door for you to imagine plants as sentient, maybe even emotional beings. That got your creative wheels turning.
But it allowed, like I just started going. My imagination kind of went haywire with it, with the idea that plants can, like, understand what's going on around them, can communicate with each other, can have feelings, and, you know, I just thought it was really exciting and thought that was a really great, what am I trying to say here? It's a great perspective when I'm thinking about my overarching goals as a choreographer, trying to digest the climate change crisis, or the climate crisis in community with my dance works. Looking at something from the dance, or from the plant perspective, I thought was a really cool idea to go for.
You're using that plant perspective as a tool to process something as massive as climate change. And you're not just thinking about it conceptually, you're building movement from it. So how does that show up in the studio?
So I've been trying to create sort of a practice where I can generate movement material that I brought to the dancers. This is probably my second time having attempted to do this sort of thing, where either reading texts from the book. Were you there when I was reading from the book?
Maybe not.
Okay, maybe that was the week after. But I would read passages from the book to the dancers, and the idea was to kind of turn their brains off and just let their bodies kind of digest the material through movement. It's a very introspective way of doing it.
So instead of interpreting ideas intellectually, you're asking dancers to respond physically, to let the body take over. And you're creating a story environment that they can live inside.
The goal was to try to, I don't know, do you know, okay, so as a dancer, at least for myself, I find that what really engages me is having this story that I can immerse myself in. It doesn't have to be a linear story. It can be like bouncing around all over the place, but having some sort of story that I have for myself from beginning to end. So I find for myself that I'm not really thinking about, like, okay, steps are 1, 2, 3, 4, blah, 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 but they're more I have a reason behind why I'm doing that, and that, so I find myself when I'm performing that I'm not really thinking about me or the present moment. I'm really like playing this character through a story.
So you're crafting a space where dancers can become characters, rooted in their own internal logic. And you use imagery to shape that logic, right?
Yeah! Imagery is so huge. And I love imagery because, unlike Well, I guess more it helps me get a sense of, like, okay, it like the energies of a certain movement, like if you're like smacking a wall, or if you're like moving like really thick through something, or if it's just like a really like ambiguous sort of move, like those images help with the quality of how the dancers perform, as well as helps paint that story of what it is that they're trying to do throughout the dance. And all that, I can't remember the points of what the point is of all that, but it's all very great. Nourishing for what all this stuff is.
They always do.
Because in order for them to be able to do their job, they have to make sense for it themselves. And I totally understand where they're coming from, because I also, being on the other side, I want to help fulfill whatever the choreographer's vision is. And that's, I just love this group so much, because you can see that that's exactly what they want to do. And that's so great. So they ask questions. They have their own sense of, like, okay, well, you're saying this, and this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm, like, imagining for myself. Is that helpful in any way? And things like that is a very much a dialogue between the dancers and me, that I like really need it in order to understand what the heck it is that I'm doing.
You're nurturing that back and forth with your dancers, and it sounds like that dialogue is just as vital as the movement itself. But it also comes with its challenges, especially when you've been living in your own head all day before rehearsal.
That I am sorry to hear about. It's the bed. But I actually, unfortunately, know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I've been in spaces where I have felt not seen and not heard and disrespected in a way, and or like this weird power dynamic that doesn't need to be there. It just doesn't. I mean, especially like the older you get, like, we're all in the same swimming pool at this point, and like, we may as well be like it. You know, like, I don't know where the swimming pool came from. We all just want to dance.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, you're all there to collaborate, to move and make meaning together. But sometimes, your own process as a choreographer can feel like it's moving at a different pace than the dancers. It's easy to forget that what feels vivid and logical in your mind may not land the same way with someone else, like when they're stepping into the material fresh.
To be in it so much and try to remember that other people haven't been in my brain all day long. And so I think I may have caused some frustration amongst my dancers that day. And that, you know, is
part of the process.
It's part of the process, and everyone, you know, at the end of the day, like, they're just like, this is gonna happen, you know? We don't understand it yet, but we will understand it. Or we can talk about it another time so that we can move on to something else and leave this as just like a pin to come back to.
That kind of patience and trust is so essential. Next, let's pick back up with how you're shaping the full three-part work and how that connects back to previous pieces like the plastic dance and your white-tailed deer choreography.
That is a good question. It is similar, in the sense of how I've, kind of structured how I'm putting everything together. Last fall I had like a, little residency period at Cedar Creek, and then this project here is for another section of what the ultimate work will eventually be. And then I have plans for making the third section, and that was similar with the Awe Factor, where I like had these little nuggets of dances that I had choreographed with various people in various places, and then just put it all together to create the work.
Okay.
So this one is similar to that. I find that I work best when I'm able to just like concentrate on one thing at a time.
So it sounds like you're assembling your pieces in stages, creating smaller nuggets of dance and then combining them into something larger, something layered. That kind of modular process must give you a lot of flexibility.
I'm imagining it's gonna be probably about an hour and a half, depending on how excited I get. Or I guess I don't like things to drag on for too long, but so I typically like dance works that are about an hour long. I feel like it's a lot for the dancers, it's a lot for the audience to take in, especially like having all these different nuggets. They're normally really rich nuggets. There's a lot of things going into them. So for the audience to take in 2 hours of a lot of really rich material is, even myself, I get tired. Like, yeah. I can't handle that. But I have some ideas that might bump it to even longer than an hour. But I guess long story short, I'm aiming for an hour.
Right. Finding that balance between offering depth and honoring people's attention spans. Speaking of rich material, I'd love to hear more about your dreams for set design in this new work. I know you've got some pretty vivid ideas.
Oh gosh, I have dreams. Yeah. I have no idea if they're possible at all. But for example, we were out at Cedar Creek last fall in this oak savanna. And we got to perform it in late October, so it was just gorgeous fall colors at the time. It was really, really nice. And also the grasses were like this really nice, like weedy color. Even though they weren't wheat grass, they were a different type of grass. My ultimate dream, yes, I do want props and costumes. My ultimate dream would have the whole stage covered in some sort of grasses of some sort. It'd be cool to have like trees in there too to get like, but that might be getting a bit extreme, though I have put trees on stage before. I did, I had like this sumac stand in my first piece about white-tailed deer. It's a great piece. It was very fun. But I had sumac that the dancers could like move around the sumac. So it was like when you catch a deer in the prairie, they're like spackled through a... Ooh. It was really cool. So I guess to say that trees aren't out of the question.
A living, immersive ecosystem right there on the stage. It's beautiful. I know it's a challenge to work with organic material, but you've got some DIY experience from your past productions, right?
That would be the ultimate dream. And, like, I know that you can get AstroTurf for stuff, but, like, I would want, like, big, tall grass that they would have to be moving through. That would be so cool. I need to talk to, I have a person that I go to. I actually, my lighting designer is also a set designer at Pillsbury House. Plug for Pillsbury. She's great. But she helped me create the plastic drop set design as well. Because there's a lot of, like, we totally did it like garage style, just like DIY. Like, it's the simplest mechanism possible, but that's what we're doing here. And it worked great. Like, that's all I needed to make the effect. So,
totally.
Yeah. But I think I would probably talk to her and be like, what are the possibilities on this?
Yeah.
The ultimate goal would be that it's actual live grasses. But that becomes, you know, crazy. That's probably crazy. That, like, is not sustainable to do that. But, and so this is, yeah, where my mind's going. And that's where the plastic dance, I think, became so feasible, is that I didn't have to spend money. I didn't have to use a lot of resources. The resources were already there and just being, I just asked for them and people were, like, raining plastic on me, for lack of a better way of saying it. It becomes super easy to gather that material.
Yeah.
And that's what I would hope to do for this next show too. Try to use like thrift all my costumes and
I thrifted all of it from there's a lot of online thrift shops that you can go to where either people are selling them on Facebook Marketplace or there's a couple of online stores that I could you can it helps a lot because then you don't have to go to Goodwill or Savers and have to try to find items like that.
It's clear sustainability is baked into your process from the materials you source to the themes you explore. Tell me a bit about how the Plastic Dance came together and how that project evolved.
The Awe Factor I had created and it premiered in May of 2024. And we got the opportunity to partner with Hennepin County and their Plastic Challenge that they do every February. Mark your calendars. And because we got to partner with them, we got an opportunity to be able to perform the work again, at least the second half where it was really about single-use plastic waste. Very much so. We were in a much smaller space. Not everyone was able to make the performance work. So at the end, it was only six dancers. It was six? Yeah, six out of the 10 people. And I got to jump in because there was a spot available to me. And I was a little nervous to do my own work. Because I definitely can ask hard things of dancers, but then when I try to do the hard things that I ask of my dancers, it's a different story sometimes.
Yeah.
But it was really, it helped me connect to the work in a different way as well. Because it's one thing to see it from the outside and then to be in it as well. And once again, going back to how I work as a dancer, I paint that story for myself from start to finish. And that helped me kind of build more, find more information about the work that I didn't have before.
That firsthand experience, stepping into the piece yourself, clearly deepened your relationship with the material. And speaking of returning to earlier work, you've mentioned wanting to revisit your piece about white-tailed deer. What's drawing you back?
Well, it's funny that you say that. I know that I want to go back to the deer piece because actually there's a new book out that's talking about our relationship with deer. When, at the time, I was trying to find information about because white-tailed deer are the largest mammal in Minnesota, right? As far as wildlife is concerned. I mean, minus bears up north. But I guess it's the most common. It's the most iconic animal that yes. most people have seen before. So it was my attempt to get people to appreciate, you know, one of the wild things that we see but pretty much on a day-to-day basis wherever you are, like if you go to a park or wherever, or they're just like hanging out in people's yards, like they're great, they're a wonderful cute animal. Anyway, there's this whole book out now about our relationship with deer, and I want to read that book and I want to go back to that dance and see if it changes it in any way. One of the nice things about that dance was that it was about white-tailed deer, but also allowed me to explore different seasons, how Minnesota experiences four seasons. Awesome. It was really awesome. And sad in a way, because when I think about climate change, and I mean, our winters the last couple of years have been totally like non-winters, essentially. They haven't really been winters at all. Mm-hmm. And so that's, it was nice to have like that memorialized thing. Like these are we used to have four seasons.
That's such a powerful reflection. That idea that your choreography becomes a kind of archive, a memory of how things used to be. So much of your work circles back to nature and the ways we live with it. Outside of dance, what are some of the ways you connect with the land and your surroundings?
I bike. I do a lot of biking. I love biking. Okay. Oh my gosh. If I could bike every day, I would.
Okay.
My partner has gotten me into winter biking, so I have a aluminum bike that won't rust with studded tires on it so that I can bike around in the winter. It's great. I go camping, go hiking. I love a good beach lay. I love laying on the beach.
You're definitely someone who thrives in motion, even outside of the studio. And I know you've had some formative travel experiences too. Can you tell me about how those shaped your dance practice?
I've traveled quite a bit. I mean, you know, like I've spent my 20s. I actually studied abroad, like, and not just like studied, like I got my degree, like I went abroad for my college, university, conservatory stuff. So I was at the Laban Conservatory, that's in England, for 3 years. And then I was at very fancy French school. It's not that fancy. It was a state school. But it was the National Center of Contemporary Dance in Angers, which is how I learned French, which is how I ended up here. Second story of my life. So I spent a lot of time in Europe for 6 years. I've been to Japan to do some studying of a specific Japanese, modern Japanese dance form.
Yes.
Buto.
Yes.
Yeah. I did that. I was pretty intense on that for a while. It actually informs a lot of how I create my works. Like a lot of the painting stories and imagery comes from what I learned from Buto. I've been just in my regular travels. Like Italy, I've been to the Scandinavia and several of those parts of the world. I'm looking at a map right now to remember. Been to Spain, Italy, Quebec. Mostly, yeah. I think that's it.
You're well traveled.
I love it. It's really great. And then I also love traveling in Minnesota.
There's so much diversity in your background, globally and locally. You've explored the world, but you also have this deep appreciation for the land right here in Minnesota.
I love discovering little corners. I think because I spent so much time thinking that the further away I got from Minnesota, the better it would be, and then discovered that there was so much in Minnesota that I actually don't know about and is really, really cool. So I do a lot of, like my partner and I just did a bike trip from, this was last summer, from the Twin Cities to Winona. We met in the Conservation Corps, so that's another, the Conservation Corps. I did the Conservation Corps, which is where I learned that Minnesota is super cool and has a lot of awesome natural spaces that you can't find anywhere else in the world, and it is here. And so he and I met then, and so our biking to Winona was like, we got to go through all the parks that we worked in together, and so that was really memorable and so nice too, because to travel across the world, like you take planes, you're in trains, cars and things, and to travel on a bike to slow everything down. And the whole point of the trip was to be traveling on a bike.
What a beautiful way to reconnect with place and with each other. And before we wrap up, I've heard you've also been getting your hands a little dirty in the garden lately.
I'm not just work. I do have a little bit of play in there. I do want to say also that I have just started my little seedlings for my veggie garden as well. I love doing that. I mean, ooh. I am the worst. Like, I kill everything I touch when it comes to plants.
Really?
I don't know. I don't understand, but I think I got it from my mom. But she has learned, and she is a thriving garden, and it is gorgeous. So I have full faith that I will be able to. So I am... have 18 neighbors, and we all want to get a rooftop garden, but until then there's a community garden plot that's like three blocks away or something like that.
Great.
That's where I try to do, and then you know people come and pick my carrots for me, and it's like, oh, that's cool. But
it sounds like your creativity and care for the world extends far beyond the stage. Brenna, thank you so much for sharing your practice, your stories, and your passion with us. I can't wait to see what blooms next.